Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Education Report and the Making of a Nation, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again. Welcome back to As It Is, the program that helps you learn and improve your American English. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Today, we have two stories that come from the United States. The first is about illegal immigration. Thousands of people have been crossing the country's southern borders, hoping to find work and a new life. Some say the situation is now a crisis. But many of these people do not understand the rules. We will have details. Then, it's American politics. Some opinion polls show that many Americans do not like the way President Obama has been doing his job, and that may have an effect on this fall's congressional elections. Illegal immigration also plays a part in this story. So be sure to listen carefully, print the script, download the audio, and then practice every day to learn American English. Now, here is part one of the program. The American government says people in Central America are coming to the United States because they believe they will be permitted to stay if they claim they are refugees escaping violence. But this is not true. Jonathan Evans joins us now to explain the situation.
A former U.S. immigration officer says actions being taken by Border Patrol agents at the U.S.-Mexico border may be causing people to believe differently. The Obama administration says as many as 90,000 children might try to enter the United States illegally from Mexico this year. Why so many? Former U.S. Immigration Special Agent Hipólito Acosta says U.S. law might be the reason.
When individuals enter the country illegally and they are issued a notice to appear for a later date for an immigration hearing, the likelihood is they're not going to appear.
Mr. Acosta says more federal agents are needed to find people who do not come to court when ordered. He says family members in the United States who pay to smuggle their children into the country should be held responsible.
If that family member is in the country illegally, we must reunite them with the children that enter the country, and they must all be placed in deportation proceedings and ultimately removed from the country.
Mr. Acosta says he crossed the border illegally many times when he worked as a Border Patrol agent.
The first agent in the history of our agency that actually went into Mexico, got smuggled all the way from Mexico to the interior city in the United States.
Mr. Acosta wrote a book called The Shadow Catcher. In the book, he tells about the times when he made people think he was an immigrant. Police call this going undercover. He also writes about when he spoke in court against smugglers and people who abused immigrant children. Mr. Acosta grew up in a Mexican-American community near the border in Texas. He speaks English and Spanish. He says immigrants should respect U.S. law.
Certainly, I can understand somebody trying to make a better way of life, but I expect them to go and do it the right way.
Mr. Acosta says some politicians are not trying to solve the problem. He says some of them use the immigration issue to gain political support.
I think they just need to put those things aside and do what's best for the country.
Mr. Acosta says Congress should pass an immigration reform bill that would allow people from Central America and Mexico to work in the United States temporarily. He says the law also should punish employers who let undocumented immigrants work in their companies. I'm Jonathan Evans.
This is a congressional election year in the United States. Some Democratic Party candidates are concerned about President Obama's unpopularity. In public opinion surveys, only about 40% of the people approve of the way Mr. Obama does his job. That could hurt the Democrats' chances to keep control of the Senate. Katie Weaver takes the story from there.
Illegal immigration has been a central news issue in the recent past. But Mr. Obama is talking mostly about the economy and Congress's failure to pass legislation.
Whenever and wherever I have the power, the legal authority, to help families like yours, even if Congress is not doing anything, I will take that opportunity. I will try to make something happen.
Republican Party lawmakers plan to take legal action against Mr. Obama. They say they will ask a judge to order him to stop using some presidential powers.
You hear some of them. They're like, sue him. Impeach him. Really? Really? For what? You're going to sue me for doing my job?
Republicans blame the president for not doing more to secure the southern border of the United States. Speaker of the House John Boehner is among those critics.
This is a problem of the president's own making. He's been president for 5.5 years. When's he going to take responsibility for something?
Some Democrats also are pressuring the president. Illinois Representative Luis Gutierrez wants to protect children who are illegally entering the United States.
I plan to support the president's budget request, but we must make sure we do not short-circuit justice for the children.
Charlie Cook is a U.S. political expert. He says the president's weak public opinion ratings will make it difficult for Democrats to get elected in November.
It is a problem whenever you have a president who's a midterm election with a president whose approval rating is well below 50% and whose disapproval ratings are above 50%, at or above 50%. It's a problem.
John Fortier is a political expert at Bipartisan Policy Center. He says Republicans could control both the House and Senate next year.
They need 6 seats to take to make the majority, but they've got a good shot, at least a 50-50 shot, of taking the Senate and probably even gaining a few seats in the House.
Charlie Cook says the second term in office is often difficult for American presidents.
You get into years 6, 7, and 8, they kind of run out of gas, and bad things typically happen.
Mr. Obama appears to be ready to campaign for Democratic Party candidates, but it is not clear how many of them believe his support would help them. Some of them think it would hurt, so they are staying away from the president. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. How about if we spend the next minute talking about events in the United States? Up in Hayward, Wisconsin, people are having fun at the Lumberjack World Championships. They compete to see who can climb a tree the fastest, or who can saw through a thick log the quickest. They also do log rolling. That's when two people stand on a log in the water and try to get the other person at the other end of the log to fall off. It really is a lot of fun to watch. In Hershey, Pennsylvania, things are a little quieter. They are enjoying the National Quilt Show. Judges are voting for the nicest and most complicated bed coverings made by hand. And in Washington, D.C., the As It Is team is heading home. We'll see you tomorrow, right here on VOA.
The Education Report is next, followed by The Making of a Nation. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Education Report. The cost of attending university in the United States has risen greatly in the past 20 years. Many people today say they owe huge amounts of money for loans they received for higher education. These students, past and present, say they are drowning in debt. Movie maker Andrew Rossi examines education debt in the film Ivory Tower. The documentary was released to movie theaters recently. Ivory Tower is often used in America to mean university or college. Andrew Rossi wrote, directed, and produced Ivory Tower. He says college tuition, the cost of attending classes, increased by about 1,100% between 1978 and today. Estimates place the nation's combined debt for student loans at $1 trillion. One comment made by a woman in Ivory Tower shows the deep concern that student loans can cause.
If I do ever have kids, my private loans will be directly passed to them, even if I die. It's a nightmare.
But one young man in the Washington, D.C. area says he does not face much worry about college costs. Brandon Attila says his parents prepaid his tuition. He is working this summer at a restaurant in Alexandria, Virginia. Mr. Attilis also plans to reduce his expenses by sharing a house with two friends.
My parents are paying the cost of the house, but I'm paying the utilities. So between the two, it's still less expensive than having actually living in the dorms.
His mother, Chris Attilis, says she and her husband began saving money for college tuition shortly after each of their children was born.
We took care of 4 years of college education for less than a year costs in today's market.
Still, many families lack enough money to do that. The movie notes that there have been reductions in government aid for education. Some colleges also build beautiful but costly campuses in hopes of getting students to attend. But the building projects can also increase costs for students. Ms. Attilis visited colleges with Brandon.
They put on a good show, and walking through, looking at the granite sinks in the bathrooms, thinking, this is not what it looked like when I went to school.
Ivory Tower suggests that many students choose not to get a traditional college education because of the costs. Some try online education. Brandon Attilis, however, says online education is not for everyone.
You have to be a real hard worker. You have to really want it.
He says he hopes that his own schooling will lead to a good business education and a good career. He hopes it will not include huge debt built at the so-called ivory towers of education. And that's the VOA Learning English Education Report. I'm Bob Doty.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Early in 1857, the United States Supreme Court announced one of its most important rulings. The High Court decided the case of a slave named Dred Scott. This week in our series, Harry Monroe and Leo Scully tell us about the ruling and the continuing national debate over slavery.
Dred Scott lived in Missouri, where slavery was legal. Then he was sold to a man who took him to Illinois and Wisconsin, where slavery was not legal. After 4 years, he was returned to Missouri. Dred Scott demanded his freedom because of the years he had spent in places where slavery was illegal. Congress had banned slavery in those places under the Missouri Compromise Act of 1820. The Supreme Court ruled that Congress did not have the power to close territories to slavery. It said the Missouri Compromise was a violation of the United States Constitution, and that Dred Scott was not a free man.
James Buchanan was sworn in as president at the time of the Dred Scott case. Buchanan believed the Supreme Court's decision would put an end to the dispute over slavery. He believed that Americans, North and South, would accept the decision as the final word in the dispute. This did not happen. The Dred Scott decision did not calm the storm that divided the nation. Instead, it increased its fury.
New trouble threatened to break out in the territory of Kansas between pro-slavery and anti-slavery settlers. In the past few years, the two sides had argued and fought over their opinions. They even had formed two separate governments. The pro-slavery forces controlled the legal government. The anti-slavery forces controlled an opposition government which had no power. Supporters of slavery wanted to organize a constitutional convention that could put Kansas into the Union as a slave state. The pro-slavery legislature passed a bill calling for such a convention. The bill gave supporters of slavery every chance to control the election of delegates to the convention, and it gave the convention complete freedom to make its own rules. The bill provided no way for the people of Kansas to vote on their own constitution.
The governor of the Kansas Territory, John Geary, vetoed the bill. But the legislature quickly overruled his veto. Pro-slavery men called for Geary to get out of Kansas. Some talked of shooting him if he did not leave. Governor Geary had been living under extreme tension for months. He had worked hard to keep Kansas peaceful. He was angry because he could get no help from the federal government. He sent his resignation to President Buchanan. Then the former governor spoke publicly. He said most of the settlers in Kansas were peace-loving people. He said only a small group was responsible for the trouble there. Geary said a few powerful men hoped to make Kansas a slave state. If this failed, Geary said, they hoped their actions would produce Civil War.
President Buchanan appointed a new governor for Kansas. Buchanan told him that slavery in the territory must be decided on the votes of the people of the territory. And he said the people must be given a fair chance to approve or reject a constitution for statehood. The new governor arrived in Kansas at the end of May 1857. He explained his policies in a speech to the people of Kansas. The new governor promised to enforce the laws of the pro-slavery legislature, but only those laws which were constitutional. He urged everyone to vote in the coming election of delegates to the Constitutional Convention. He said he was hopeful that the convention would offer its constitution to the people for their approval or rejection. He added that Congress would not accept Kansas as a slave state or a free state until the people had voted on the question of slavery.
On June 15th, the election was held for delegates to the Constitutional Convention. Most anti-slavery men did not vote because their names had been kept off the voting lists by pro-slavery officials. Others refused to vote because they believed the election was unfair. 60 delegates were elected. All supported slavery. They planned to meet in the autumn to begin work on a constitution for Kansas. Most of the delegates were wild, rough men who found it difficult to read and write. But these men were sure of one thing. They wanted Kansas to be a slave state.
The delegates began the Constitution by claiming that the right of property was higher than any constitutional power. They said a slave owner had as much right to his property as the owner of any other kind of property. Then they wrote the different parts of the document. One part of the Constitution severely limited the right of the legislature to free slaves. Another part barred free Negroes from entering Kansas. And another prevented the Constitution from being changed for 7 years.
Most of the delegates to the Kansas Constitutional Convention wanted to send the document directly to Congress for approval. They did not want to give the people of Kansas a chance to vote on it. They were sure that the majority of the population would reject a constitution that made slavery legal. Some delegates, however, knew that Congress would not approve statehood for Kansas unless the people voted on the Constitution. The two sides finally agreed on a compromise.
The Constitution itself would not be offered to the people. Instead, the people would vote only on the question of slavery. They could vote for the Constitution with slavery or the Constitution without slavery. If the voters approved the Constitution with slavery, then Kansas would be open to new slaves. If they approved the Constitution without slavery, then Kansas would be closed to new slaves. Slaves already in the territory could be kept there. This compromise brought a cry of anger from opponents of slavery in Kansas. They said the Constitutional Convention had only given them the right to vote for limited slavery or unlimited slavery. It had not given them the right to vote for freedom.
President Buchanan had promised the people of Kansas that they would have a fair chance to vote on their Constitution. But members of his cabinet told him to forget this promise. They said Americans were tired of the dispute in Kansas and would accept any settlement. They told Buchanan that approval of the Constitution would end the Kansas problem. It would satisfy the South, they said, and the North would soon forget about Kansas. Under this pressure, President Buchanan made his decision. He would ask Congress to accept the pro-slavery Kansas Constitution and make the territory a slave state.
In Kansas, the vote on slavery was held. Most opponents of slavery did not vote. They were waiting until they could vote against the complete statehood constitution. Many of the votes were illegal. Still, Kansas officials declared that slavery had been approved. They urged Congress to make Kansas a state under this condition. Shortly after, President Buchanan sent Congress a similar message. Buchanan's chief opponent on the statehood bill was a member of his own Democratic Party, Senator Stephen Douglas of Illinois. Douglas did not oppose slavery, but he believed that the people of a territory had the right to make their own decision to accept or reject slavery.
Stephen Douglas united other Democrats and members of the anti-slavery Republican Party to fight against the bill in the Senate. He lost. The Senate approved the bill to make Kansas a state where slavery was legal. The House of Representatives, however, rejected the bill. Instead, it approved a bill to let the people of Kansas vote again on their statehood constitution. The Senate approved a compromise version of this House bill.
So the people of Kansas got another chance to show that they did not want a pro-slavery constitution. They voted and rejected the constitution by a large majority. The pro-slavery statehood constitution was dead. Kansas would continue as a territory for a few more years, but there would be no further attempt to make it a slave state.
Our program was written by Frank Beardsley. The narrators were Harry Monroe and Leo Scully. Transcripts, MP3s, and podcasts of our programs can be found, along with historical images, at voaspecialenglish.com. And you can follow our series on Twitter at twitter.com/VOA Learn English, spelled as one word. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English.